winding your way down on Baker Street, light in your head and dead on your feet. Well, another crazy day, you'll drink the night away and forget about everything. This city desert makes you feel so cold. It's got so many people, but
everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. Well, you know what? We got a wonderful program for you today, and I'll tell you why. We have on the show the executive director of a program called Focus, which is a reentry program that's being run out of Boulder, Colorado. Her name is Tanya Leontov, and Tanya's here today to explain to us how her program works. And the reason I've got her on here is because I think every county in this country should have a program exactly like Tanya's. If you're an ex-offender listening to the show, there's some valuable information here for you, and we're going to come right back with Tanya after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope.
In his place, he opens the door, he's got that look on his face, and he asks you where you've been. You tell him who you've seen, and you talk about it.
Sorry, you're standing at my door. Guess this means you take back all you said before. Like how much you wanted anyone but me. Said you'd never come back, but here you are again. 'Cause we belong.
There. I want to thank Gloria for the wonderful Christmas card she sent from Montana, a fan of the show, and I want you to write us too. You can catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's MathersRodney at yahoo.com. Drop us a line. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to The Journey of Hope. We have as our special guest today Tanya Leontov. She is the executive director of Restoring the Soul, Faith, and Community Partnerships in a program called Focus. She's going to explain how all those fit together here for us in just a minute. And I want to tell you something. I asked Tanya to be on The Journey of Hope because I feel like the reentry program that she's directing ought to be implemented in every county in this country. Tanya, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
We want to welcome you to the Journey of Hope. Can we just start by talking about what we were, you know, a little bit about what we were talking about just prior to the interview, about how Focus got started and the way it's all set up and so forth. Could you explain that to us?
Certainly. Well, in 2001, a task force was begun, which was made up of executive directors of the major human service agencies in Boulder County and many faith leaders in Boulder County from diverse congregations of Christian, Jewish, and Buddhist. And we were looking at the kind of service that congregations were providing to the community at large, not just to their congregants, which, of course, almost everybody does, but to others beyond their borders who are not necessarily part of their congregations. And we looked into that a lot and found that there was a wide range of participation from the downtown churches, as we call them, who even started some of the social service agencies, to other congregations that said they were really involved in their internal affairs and just weren't ready to provide services beyond their borders, and then many people along the way. And we spent a few years looking into that, doing workshops and conferences on that to encourage that. And in 2003, we realized that there was a lot to do to help congregations kind of come out beyond their congregants and start working with the community at large. And I became executive director at that point. Mm-hmm. In 2005, we recognized that we had decided in Boulder, Colorado, we would never start another nonprofit because it has so many. But in 2005, one of the board members said, look, there is a population that's not being served, and those are people coming out of the jail. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of services, but putting it together is really an uphill climb. So at that point, we got together and partnered both with the jail and the probation department here to train and provide mentors for people coming out of jail who made that request that they needed some support of that kind. Mm-hmm. And so Focus began in 2005 with one mentor, because the jail system was so rigid at that point that it was really hard to get a new program in the jail. Mm-hmm. But over a period of time, by the time we got to the second year, a lot of changes had started to be made, and the sort of mindset of the criminal justice system here was turning towards rehabilitation rather than confinement and punishment. Mm-hmm. And so we put 7 mentors in the field, and then the next year 12, and so forth and so on. We have over 20 in the field at this point, and we're looking to just about double it this coming year. And the congregations, as well as fraternal organizations and just the citizenry in general, became mentors. People volunteered, you know, and we've extended our program now that a mentor stays with a person if they want. It's totally voluntary. We're not a mandated program. We cooperate with all the criminal justice services because, you know, we're working in their field, but we are not a reporting agency. We're private. And the mindset has changed in Boulder, Colorado tremendously. I mean, now there's a community reentry council where the social services and the criminal justice systems are working together to facilitate people coming back into the community with their basic needs met.
Tanya,
it's been a long, successful journey, actually.
You bring up an excellent point there that just fascinates me. Why do you, and I know you're just guessing, just like I would be, but why do you think there was this shift in the kind of thinking about people coming out of prison? Why do you think that was?
Well, I think, you know, unless we built prisons wall to wall from East Coast to West Coast, we can't contain enough people. I mean, it's almost 3 million people at any given time are incarcerated. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at that and say something's wrong. And I think from saying, you know, what are we going to do, keep building more and more and more and more jails and prisons, or are we going to look at the issue and say, why isn't this working and what can we do to help people? Mm-hmm. You know, lead just sort of normal life by their definition, mm-hmm. you know, and not go back to jail constantly, you know, or prison. I think that was it. I think we became overwhelmed with the social problem of incarceration. Mm-hmm. And so people looked for options and it became apparent that the major option was to help people rather than just lock them up.
Have you found that since your program has been initiated that judges are more lenient in the county?
Well, the county is really good that way. The judges are very compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the whole system is moving towards, you know, listening and putting in new programs. There are lots and lots of new programs.
Mm-hmm.
About a year and a half ago, well, I said we started this community reentry council, and we have a very forward-looking chief judge, and she's helped institute particular courts for drug addicts and for alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
And for people with family problems to
mm-hmm.
really give them, take them out of incarceration and give them a very strong support system for 18 months or so and try to really help them succeed.
Wow. I'm just so impressed.
But also what's really interesting, and you'll find this interesting, is we've had a number of calls from all around the country asking us to share our program with them from Tennessee and from Minnesota and from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Name a few, and I've only been able to do a little bit of that because, you know, there's so much demands on time, but it's really encouraging. I think these programs are starting.
Well, I was going to ask you if you felt like, you know, this gap that you talked about existed in other communities, and you know, obviously it does, and that was the whole reason for me bringing you on, Tanya, is, you know, we have a small little podcast here, but you never know who's listening. I'm just so impressed with your program. Tell me a little bit about the requirements for being a mentor. What are the requirements for that?
Okay, well, first of all, someone has to want to be a mentor, and that means
obviously
a year to two commitment
mm-hmm.
of seeing someone generally once a week or twice a week, and then also being available for times like hearings, when the day that someone gets out of incarceration, making sure that they're settled and that their basic needs are in place, being there for any kind of crisis, which come up a good bit,
mm-hmm.
And just for encouragement. And so that's a big commitment, and it's not everybody's cup of tea.
No, I'm sure it's not.
But enough people, many from different congregations, as I said, and then from other places, just want to help somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And they like the idea of working one-on-one and working in-depth with someone.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of therapists who join our program, not to do therapy, because in our guidelines, we say we will not do therapy and we don't do ministry. There's
mm-hmm.
no proselytizing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some pastors who've joined it who are willing to work with those guidelines. So that's the first step. You
mm-hmm.
have to want to do it. And the second, then everyone has a background check.
Right.
We interview them, you know, to see. I mean, for some people, some of our guidelines they felt they couldn't abide by. We had one woman, we don't give our personal information to our mentee, and that's
mm-hmm.
the best practices in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So people are known by their first name. They have a cell phone that's a focus cell phone, so they're always available.
Oh,
they don't
wow.
give their address, and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We require that. And there was one woman who felt that she wouldn't abide by that.
Mm-hmm.
And so she didn't mentor. But then if people are willing to do that and willing to commit to the time and not to do ministry and not to do therapy, we have a 16-and-a-half-hour training. A lot of it is in motivational interviewing because our whole approach is that the person we're working with who has been incarcerated, and most people quite a few times, they're going to drive the ship.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to let us know what they want their life to look like and how ready they feel to make any sort of change. And we're not going to impose ideas on them and our values. And we're not going to push them. We'll just encourage them and support them. And people think it's easy, but we find out in practice that that's not people's approach. They want something good to happen. And when you're ambitious that way, it can turn into a sort of aggression. So we're very careful about that, and we do continual training after our mentors have that 16-and-a-half hours. We train once a month
mm-hmm.
Further in this technique of motivational interviewing and stages of change. So it teaches people to be sensitive to the language of the person they're working with
mm-hmm.
and where they're resistant and where they're afraid and intimidated, and just to be gentle and kind and you know, be present. We really feel it's the power of someone's presence who wishes you well that makes a lot of difference.
You have a process also of matching the mentor to the ex-offender. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Well, now say that again. I didn't catch the question.
How do you match the...
First come, first serve.
Okay, oh, really?
Same gender uh-huh. mentoring. Mm-hmm. And also we find that it's better if the mentor is at least the same age or older than the person that they're mentoring. And mm-hmm. that their life experience is their credentials.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't put a kid with someone in their 50s because the young person just wouldn't have the life experience to really be helpful to a person of that age.
What about an ex-offender? Would they be eligible to be?
Yeah, we just have one now at this point. We're very open to that.
Oh, excellent.
We think that that's invaluable experience and that it's a really great thing for self-empowerment to turn your sort of negative experiences into help for someone else.
Frankly, I was scared to ask that question. I didn't want to put you on the spot, but I'm really happy with your answer. That's excellent. Hey, tell me a little bit about how the offenders are made aware of the program. How do they learn about the program?
Offenders, did you
mm-hmm.
say?
Yes, ma'am.
I do presentations in the jail, and I often bring an ex-offender with me. Yet I have permission to bring in a few of the people that we have worked with, and one person's on our staff now, to really explain how the program helped them, you know, what its shortcomings are, like we can't guarantee housing, we can't guarantee employment, we can help, we can be present at any sort of meeting if it thinks, and we've helped with housing. We've been present at Section 8 housing, and people got it because the authorities felt that there was some stability in their corner. But we can't promise anything,
mm-hmm.
and so we try very hard not to make promises we can't keep.
Mm-hmm.
And so then once after the presentations are done in the jail and then to probation officers with the judicial district here, people send a kite to the sergeant who's our liaison, and we have a certain filter of people we feel not capable of working with, which I can tell you about mm-hmm. if you'd like.
Well, sure. What would disqualify somebody?
Well, we need people who are going to be around for a while because our program is a long-term program. So that's one of them. It usually, if a person has pled guilty or has been sentenced already and we know they're going to be somewhere in Boulder County, then we can work with them. Otherwise, if they're being moved to Adams County or, you know, or they want to go live in Texas, there's no sense beginning because it's only effective over the long term. Because change is slow for mm-hmm. everybody, whether you've ever been incarcerated or not.
That's
the first thing. And then mm-hmm. there are a few cases that we feel we can't work with for various reasons. We will not work with a habitually violent person,
mm-hmm.
and that's for the safety of our mentors.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot work with people with really advanced chronic mental illness like schizophrenia because we're not trained properly to work with that, and we don't want to hurt anybody. I mean, we feel that that's a specialized type of help, and the same with sex offenders, that they're really specialized methodology and things like that, and understanding that our mentors don't have. However, we do have in our agreement with the jail that if ever the commander feels that there's someone in any of those categories that he feels we can be helpful to, we'll work with them.
Oh, well, that's good. Excellent. Tanya, I want to talk a little bit about your grant. First of all, congratulations on being awarded your federal grant. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this is a justice assistance grant that comes from the federal government through the state for programs, and they're looking for innovative programs. And it's extremely helpful. It has the potential of being a four-year grant. It's a little surprising to most people that we got it because we're so small, but we have a lot of community support and a lot of support from the other parts of the justice system. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that probably helped. Because at this point, we only have over 20-some-odd mentors in the field, although we're planning to double that through next year if we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we got the money for, is to make that happen.
That is just excellent. And I'm hoping that someone will, you know, in some of these other communities, Texas, hello, Texas, you listening? I'm hoping somebody down here will hear the podcast. And I hear rumors from time to time that movers and shakers will check in every once in a while. I do hear that. So maybe we could get somebody. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say that we're willing to share aspects of all of our program with any community that wants to try it. I mean, it's we're totally transparent, mm-hmm. you know, and all of this depends. You know, you can administer up the wazoo, but it's really on the quality of the mentors.
Yeah, it sounds like that's where it's at, and it sounds like you have some people that are really understanding what the word empathy is. I had one question for you though. The mentees, as they come out, is a confession in terms of admitting guilt. Is that part of the process?
Okay. Not at all.
All right. I was just curious.
What we do say, it's not at all like AA or anything like that. Mm-hmm. We start from where people are at.
Mm-hmm.
And we go with them where they want to go. And we do tell them that if they have ever committed a crime that they haven't been charged for, just not to tell us.
Mm-hmm.
We're not obligated legally to report it unless it's, you know, someone's going to hurt someone or hurt themselves. And then you just do that because you're a human being. But you know, I was thinking about it this morning. What makes our mentors so wonderful? And there's someone from the mental health department that works in the jail. That's his job exclusively, and he's one of our mentor advisors. So he comes to the meetings where mentors talk about their matches and get some tips from each other and so forth. And he said, I love these meetings. People really want to help somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was, you know, so it's like that, but it's not sort of smarmy, sugary help. It's sort of, okay, here's the ground, you know, here are the things that one would basically need. What do you want? You know, how can we help you? Maybe you need support.
What I see you doing, Tanya, is giving people a chance. And that is, to me, just wonderful, because so many times offenders, you know, they're getting the thumbs down and getting slapped in the face. And what I see you doing is giving them the tools necessary to set themselves up to experience some success. It's just absolutely wonderful. I do want to switch gears here with you just a little bit.
Sure.
And I want to tap your brain here, because we do have a lot of ex-offenders that listen to the show. And because of your experience in dealing with ex-offenders, just generally speaking, what advice would you give in terms of seeking services once you're released from jail? Do you have some advice along those lines?
Well, you know, each geographical area provides the services.
Right.
If you can connect in with one that can give you a list of what's available, that's really helpful. Instead of trying to make it all over, maybe you go to social services, you go to mental health department, and ask a lot of questions. I find sometimes people are really, they haven't formulated the questions they need to ask. You know, so you have to look and say, what are my needs? You know, what are my most immediate basic needs? And find some source that can help you identify them.
Mm-hmm.
And then go for it. But I find that a lot of people don't realize sometimes there are options. And that they have rights, you know,
mm-hmm.
they can ask for help that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, actually, one of the best ways people can help themselves is to sort of find a new social context.
Mm-hmm.
So although we don't promulgate any particular religion, anyone who has some inclination that way should really look to a religious community for support, because you can get a lot there. I mean, it's just sort of a large part of the reason why people go to church or synagogue or temple or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those are the communities that can really provide a lot. But I think that what's available just depends on where you are.
Yeah.
There's no way of universalizing the resources.
Well, there's no way I was going to let you be on here and not at least ask the question.
Sure.
Tanya Leontov, Executive Director of Restoring the Soul, Faith and Community Partnerships. She is running a model program for people being released from the jail there. It's Boulder, correct? In Boulder.
Yes.
And I just hope that whoever's listening is in a position to take a look at her program. Tanya, we're going to put a link up to your website so that people can
Fantastic.
See what you're doing. And I want to thank you so much for being on the Journey of of Hope. Okay. Thank you.
Please put the link to the Focus website, focusreentry.org. That has the majority of information about this.
We will sure do that, Tanya, and thank you so much for being here. We're going to be right back after this. My name is Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope.
100 ships a day, lonely sailors pass the time away and talk about their homes. And there's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say brandy, fetch another. She serves them whiskey and wine. They'll say, Brandy.
Hey, y'all, got some great shows coming up here in the next two or three weeks right here on The Journey of Hope. We have author Jay Forte. We have Dr. Carolyn Edwards. Jim Pomponi's going to be on in two or three weeks. Lots of good stuff for ex-offenders to help you with your reentry, and that's all coming up in the next two or three weeks right here on The Journey of Hope. All we have time for this week. I want to thank my special guest, Tanya Leonta. What a great program she's running there out of Boulder. And I want to remind you of something. If God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on The Journey of Hope.